subject. Depression is a real issue in our, not just society, but our world today. The guy who discipled me, he said, he's Filipino, and he said, there is no depression in the Philippines. I said, what do you mean? And he said, the depression that debilitates you where people can't go to work, can't get up, he says, because if you don't work, you die. And I thought, you know, that's a good point. So in our society today, we not only allow for it, but we support it, we enable it in many ways. And so let's talk about some definitions first. Depression definition: an ongoing, reoccurring, debilitating mood, attitude, or feeling of hopelessness and or despair. It can be accompanied by extreme fatigue, impaired concentration, feelings of worthlessness or guilt, and occasional suicide ideation. There are these are the reasons given for why the depressed person is not fulfilling his or her responsibilities in life. Yeah, you guys know depressed people? Me too. So you go, what's the difference between depression and discouragement? And it's one word: immobility. Okay, the difference between depression and deep discouragement is immobility. And in most cases, the cause of depression is not singular, it is complex. In other words, it's not just one thing that happened, right? It's a series of events. It's a series of thoughts. Number one, most prescribed medication in America. What type of medication is it? Antidepressants or anti-anxieties. When was the last time you went to the doctor and they did not ask you if you felt like you were safe or happy, right? Are you sad? Right, that is a normal question that is asked now when you go to the doctor. Okay, am I wrong in that?
There's a new one. You have weapons that are made in a safe location.
Yes. Okay.
Three-page thing on questions that pertain to depression and sadness. Mm-hmm. They were asking me to fill out to turn in.
Wow.
I know, it was crazy.
Made you depressed. Depressing.
There it is.
Yeah. Are you safe at home? Yeah. Depression is so prevalent in our world today. And listen, I say this saying that be careful in the conversations, because you can actually shut down the conversation before it starts by being insensitive to this. And so this is a different environment probably than you would speak, you know, to people in. But declaring that someone has a diagnosis of a medical disease removes all hope. Okay, so when you agree to the medical model, it really presents a problem for gospel-oriented Christians. Okay, when we fall for the medical side, you're saying that there's no hope then. Right, we talked about that earlier. Like, you can't go back and undo your past. You know, I always tell people when they go to the doctor and the doctor wants to prescribe antidepressants, ask them, what will this do to me? What will this do for me? And I can tell you what they say. They'll take the edge off. What do you mean by that? How long do I have to take it? It's a forever thing.
And you need more. Yeah.
Yep. And what it did for you before won't, so your body will build up a tolerance, so you have to do more. Yes, what are the side effects? A lot of times when you look up the side effects of some of these antipsychotic drugs, and then you look at that, and then you look at, for us, you know, we have the PDI, right? You look at the PDI, and the PDI says, what's the problem as you see it? We call it our presentation problem. It's almost as if you copy-paste the side effects of these medications into their problem. It's the craziest thing. So whenever somebody tells me they're on medication, I always look it up. Always, without fail. And so it removes hope because no mercy, grace, forgiveness, or restoration is available if sin hasn't been admitted. Like, what do you need Jesus for if this is somebody else's fault? Right? If it's not my own heart. And two, because they're never cured. Medication is control. It doesn't cure. Right? It's not curing anything. Yeah. Gives you a little bit of relief. And if you've ever known somebody who has been heavily medicated, right, long term, Sherry and I had a good friend that she would say, and the goal is to get them here, right, just level. So no highs, no lows. And she'd say, you know, when her daughter got married, she said, I thought I knew I should be happy, but I wasn't. A loved one died. She said, I knew I should have been sad, but I didn't. I wasn't sad. Just flatline. Okay. That's the goal. Okay, the antidepressants, that's the goal. Get them flatlined. Right? No highs, no lows. Know this, that the pain and suffering of depression is real. John of the Cross. What's John of the Cross? It's a poem. I didn't know that. It's a poem. And the poem is called The Dark Night of the Soul. Some other descriptions that Ed Welch shared. My heart is empty. All the fountains that should run with longing are in me dried up. The mental pain seems unbearable. Time stands still. A veritable howling tempest in the brain. And malignant madness. That's a good way to explain it. And for us, rather than rushing to judgment, we have to be careful to respect their suffering. Okay, as counselors, we must be caring, compassionate. We must be good listeners, right? Ask good questions. At some point in the conversation, and I'm not talking about in the conversation you have with the first hour or 2 hours. I'm talking about at some point in the conversation that you're having with them, might be 3, 4, 5 weeks later, somewhere in there, you can start talking about sinful responses and how that brings hope. Sin's been died for. Sin's been paid for. We can have victory over sin. Is all depression sinful? No, it's not. Why do you think depression is considered an illness or a disease by so many people? Can't what? Get rid of it? Okay.
I want some sort of explanation. Why do I feel this way?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're going to see a doctor, sure. So this is a really interesting play on how Don did this. I really appreciate it. I'm hoping I can kind of do justice to it as we work through it. Why is it considered an illness or a disease? Well, first of all, because people who suffer from it feel badly on an ongoing basis, right? Understandably, they want relief and are unable to find it on their own. Legit, right? Okay, so it's considered an illness or disease for that reason. The second one is because people who suffer from it think they're unable to control it themselves. Okay, legitimate reason. This is why people think this is a illness or a disease. The third, because when they consult a doctor, he is typically able to prescribe medications that make them feel better. And then the last one, because finding a source for their predicament other than holding them responsible for anything in any way is desirable to them. Man, you'd rather say you're sick, right? I remember I think it was the second or third time I had kidney stones. It wasn't as bad. And I went to the doctor, and he said, "You got a pretty big kidney stone up there." And I went, "Yes." And he goes, what? And I said, I was just hoping I wasn't faking it. Right? I just wanted there to be something wrong.
Yeah.
Right? Well, that's true in the depression world as well. And because of this, because of these four different things, the conclusion is the biblical counselor is not qualified to help. Okay, so no, like most people will say you're not qualified. You're not a doctor. Right? But so let's talk about why it should not be considered an illness or a disease. Because, first of all, being made to feel better does not prove causality. And so the DSM-5, what's the DSM-5? Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of diagnoses, right? Well, what it does, the DSM-5 describes symptoms. It does not provide the cause or a cure. And you're going to love this quote here. Psychologist Irving Kirsch, associate director of placebo studies program at Harvard Medical School. Look what he says. All told, we analyzed 38 published clinical trials involving more than 3,000 depressed patients. What we found came as a big surprise. It turned out 75 to 87% of the antidepressant effect was also produced by placebos, sugar pills with no active ingredients that are used to control the effects of hope and expectation in clinical trials. And so what you have with a placebo is the ability within your mind to affect your condition. Okay, you get that? The placebo gives you the ability within your mind to affect your condition. And this is key. The patient's improvement is due to his belief that the medicine will help. Which tells you depression is not a brain disease and chemicals don't cure it. This is Harvard Medical School. Yet, even to this day, antidepressants, anti-anxiety is number one most prescribed medicine. Okay, look at the next one here, B. Because in the majority of cases, no measurable, clinical, verifiable proof exists that something is wrong within the body. In other words, there's no empirical data. There's no blood test. There's no urinalysis. There's no MRI, CT scan, biopsy, none of those things. And so Dr. Smith says, for something to qualify as an illness, there must be evidence of damage to or malfunction of some part of the body's tissue. There must be objective evidence that the body is not functioning normally, and the proof must be obtained by objective tests that yield definable, measurable data. And there's just not. Say, so no disease exist in the human body without some kind of change at the cell level, which results in abnormal function. In fact, there are no laboratory tests or x-rays that can make the diagnosis of depression. Did you hear that? There are no laboratory tests. What we do have are criteria that must be met. It has to be a list of symptoms that must be present in order to make a diagnosis of depression. We talked about that in module one, right? C, because chemical imbalance is a theory, not a proven fact. With depression, there is no proof that something is wrong with the body. The diagnosis, depression, is based on thinking, feeling, and behavior. It's subjective criteria. The biochemical theory of depression is in a state of crisis. The data just does not fit the theory. By the way, this is old. Remember, I think we told you in module two, maybe end of module one, we talked about it. They've actually disproved it now, the whole chemical imbalance thing. It's done. Right? So now the latest thing is trauma. Okay? Unverifiable. I mean, honestly, and it's, we were talking about this in our class a couple weeks ago, and they were saying, they'll go back to, you know, you might be how you are because your mom had a bad pregnancy, had a difficult pregnancy.
You marinated
the trauma in that. Yeah. Right. Which is unverifiable. Like, you can't go back and verify that. Okay. But what it does, it allows you to cast blame, to shift blame onto somebody else. So a faulty theory leads to a faulty treatment. Really?
Illness, it's not a disease.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can't prove it with blood tests, right, or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, other than that's a positive.
I mean, prove you're positive with the drug, but not, yeah, right. Yeah. So at the best, our drugs offer some symptom alleviation, but we cannot provide what people need most. People need meaning in life, and they need, what's it say? Relationship. Listen. Do you see the role of the church in here? So the conclusion then is the biblical counselor is qualified to help. And listen, you know tons of people on antidepressants, you just don't know who they are. Tons, in all of our churches, tons of people. And there's a stigma though about depression in the church, so we have to be sensitive to that. Again, I'm speaking very straightforward with you guys today. I would never go to a counselor and just go boom, 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 right? Because that would be insensitive to do that. Next point. Important considerations regarding depression. Depression is not always caused by sin. Jesus suffered depression in the garden. He was distressed, wasn't he? Second point, depression is more likely due to an emotional situational condition than a chemical imbalance or even a true verifiable medical condition. Does that make sense? All right, let's keep going. Number three, occasional bouts of depression of despair and hopelessness are part of living and struggling in a fallen world. Imagine if this was all there was. Like if we literally had heaven on earth. What would heaven be for? Yeah. Huh. And we have come to the point. We have come to think that we have a right to feel good. If not, I cannot be held accountable for neglecting my responsibilities in life. Bottom line, feelings become the basis and justification for actions or inaction. Nike came out, right, with the, if it feels good, do it. What's the implication on that? If it doesn't feel good, don't do it. So you direct your life based on your feelings.
This is something that you're going against the grain with in society today.
Yes.
It's so pushed and taught that teaching something on the contrary to what we would be doing in the counseling room.
Yes.
Completely going head to head with what.
Right. Yeah, we're weird. Really? Yeah. Right, right. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. No, listen, you guys are the strange ones, seriously, to actually believe this stuff, is you're going completely against modern Christianity, even, because pastors, you know, they're told in seminary, leave the counseling to the professionals, right? And so a lot of pastors are sending their sheep to wolves. I mean, they're right to the wolves. And so it's not just against the secular world, it's even within the churches. So praise God, we're changing some of that. Yeah, Ted.
But the odds are that some in this class have gone through depression and anxiety and or might have to go through it because God allows suffering.
Yeah.
And it's great that we would get this information. But to discount, you know, we can't really discount because it does become physical. We don't need to medicate it, but we need to go through the season of it.
Right. Yeah. There's people in here that I've counseled through depression and anxiety. Yeah. So Philippians 1, listen to what Philippians 1 says. Paul tells the Philippian church. Now, Paul's in prison, right, telling the Philippian church, for to you it has been granted for Christ's sake, not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for his sake. The Philippian church, God's will for them is that they suffer. We would take that person in church. The churches today would send them out to get medicated. Now, listen, I'm not wishing suffering on anybody, but just understand, like that, we would completely see this different. And Paul's like, I rejoice because of you. Philippians 1:29. And listen to what he says before this, verse 27. Only conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ, the sufferers, right? So that whether I come see you or remain absent, I will hear of you. You're standing firm in one spirit with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel, in no way alarmed by your opponents, which is a sign of destruction for them, but of salvation for you. That too from God, for to you it has been granted for Christ's sake, not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for his sake. Now, there are some legitimate medical conditions that will mimic depression, okay? Some very legitimate things. Sorry, there should be another slide. That's all right. Some legitimate medical conditions that can mimic depression. Hyper and hypothyroidism. Hyperthyroidism, hypothyroidism. Brain tumors. Hyperthyroidism?
Overactive and
underactive thyroid. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. All right, next one. Hypoglycemia. Oh, sorry. Sleep apnea. I'll just put it. Adrenal insufficiency. I got a feeling it's going to run off the screen here. Hypoglycemia. You guys have these on yours?
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't need to just. Okay. Something got messed up in my order of things there. Yeah. Stroke, multiple sclerosis, lupus. I'm just going to get to the end of this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's not sin. Right? But we still can walk with them through that. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Rebecca. Do you know anything about that? Yeah. So I never say when you text me and say, you know, this is going on, or I don't say you need to confess that as sin. I hope I've never said that. I don't think I've ever said that. all right. So getting ready to get into our table groups. The spiral of depression. The spiral of depression. Unchecked sin become the cords that bind us tighter and tighter. And so I want to talk about this spiral because you really start to see it. And so I've got 7 on here, but I think, and you guys got them in your notes, but what I want to look at is this spiral. And so we're just going to number the tables this way. This will be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, okay? And so group 1, you'll do David, okay? Group 2, we'll do Cain. Group 3, we'll do Elijah. Group 4, we'll do Ahab. Group 5, Jonah. And group 6, Peter. And what I want you guys to do as you do this is to just kind of, and most of the answers are already there for you, but just identify that spiral as it goes down. Does that make sense? Okay. All right. So it probably won't take more than about 10 minutes or so. Yeah. So he went from disobedience to lust to adultery to murder. Yeah. All right. So murder was the last one on there.
Wow.
Yeah.
To the song, that's
what
the
description. That's funny. Okay. All right, who had the, okay, table two, who'd you guys have? Okay. So it started with disobedience, right? Ended in murder. Okay. All right. Table three. Who'd you have? Elijah. Okay. What's his deal? Right. Response, say again. Despondency, okay. Yeah. Yeah, he was suicidal, really, is what it kind of came down to. It's like, I don't want to live anymore. And but, like, in context, though, this was right after... defeating the prophets of Baal, right, on Mount Carmel, which is I don't remember who I heard say it a long time ago. They said, oftentimes after your greatest spiritual victories, you'll find your greatest spiritual defeats. That's so true.
So true.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sometimes the most holy thing you can do is take a nap. Yeah, yeah. Not now. All right, how about table four? Who'd you have?
We had Ahab.
Okay.
So basically with Ahab, he wanted his neighbor's vineyard. The neighbor wouldn't give it to him. So he went home depressed. Enters in Ahab's wife Jezebel, who asks why he's not eating, yada yada yada, tells the whole story. And this is the part where it kind of shifts to Jezebel, and I don't know if it's Ahab's, like, because it's his wife, it's the responsibility.
Yeah.
But either way, Jezebel.
Yeah. Right, as a result. Yeah. Okay, how about Jonah? Let's hear about Jonah.
So Jonah, you know, was asked by God to go to Nineveh and preach to them, and he didn't want to do that. It's revealed throughout the book that he just really had no good thoughts, desires for the Ninevites. Obviously, he turned away from God, and we probably, most of us know that story and how that turned out. Interestingly, you know, God had prepared that as a way to save him.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't, I don't know, this is just coming to my mind right now. Sometimes the trial that we go through, you know, we think is just this awful thing, but at the same time, it's a thing that God's using to save us. And
right.
Give us
right.
We
need. Yeah.
Sorry. And then, you know, Jonah gets spit up on the land, says, okay, I'll go. You know, like if my plan one didn't work, I guess I'll do this.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't real happy about that. He goes through and preaches, and of course, you know, sometimes we imagine, man, wouldn't it be great if God would use us for this great revival, and that's exactly what happened, but he wasn't happy about that.
Yeah.
Because, again, his bias and contempt and all of those things, and so he went off and kind of just sulked in his own self, you know, and complained and griped and did all those things and expressed his anger and sort of shaking his fist at God in prayer.
Right.
Interesting. You know, so eventually he and God sort of had this conversation, you know, and he ends up in the place where, you know, God's trying to teach him about his own anger and his problems and his bias and all these things. And it's interesting because Jonah, you know, God asks him, man, was it right for you to be angry about, you know, this plant and these things? He's like, yes, it was right.
Yeah.
Like blind to his own issues and things that are going on.
Right.
And eventually he says, yeah, to the point of death. Like, you know, as if to say, I'd rather die than to keep going in this direction.
Yeah. So, yeah. He was suicidal too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. All right. Last one. But Peter.
Peter, he, first of all, he denied Christ 2 times. And he lied also. So I would say we are bathing between lying and repentance.
Mm.
Because afterwards, he remembered what Christ had told him.
Yeah.
And according to the Bible, I mean, we saw that he's the one who asked to be crucified upside down.
Mm.
So, I mean, we're kind of baiting with the lying and repentance from there.
Well, and I think in this story, I mean, we see him hiding.
Yes.
Weeping. We see him cursing.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. I mean, which is pretty depressed, you know? Yeah, depressed, despondent. And then you get Judas, right?
Yes.
Unbelief leads to deception. He betrays Christ, and ultimately he kills himself. Suicide. All right. So in your notes, I don't think you got this. Depression occurs when we respond in an ungodly or unbiblical manner to wicked, difficult, challenging, or sinful circumstances.
Okay, so the first sentence of it.
Yep. And I'm going to fly through these things here.
It's on page 10, number 1.
Hey, Mike?
Yeah.
Your mic.
Go ahead.
Your microphone.
Oh, it's right here. So. Oh, it's not? Really? Oh. I'm going to fly through these just because we just did them. Okay, so how do we stop the spiral? Biblical principles for unwinding the spiral. And listen, this is good for all of us. This isn't just good for the person you're counseling, right? Biblical principles for unwinding the spiral. Fulfill all responsibilities regardless how you feel. Don't let your feelings determine your course of action. You tell your feelings how to feel. I heard a great illustration, and I don't know if I'd rather draw it, but said, like, if you put a person here, right? We'll go this way. So I'm here, and then in the middle, these are our problems, and then on this side is God, right? So person, problems, God. And so when we look at God through our problems, God's really distorted. Those need to be switched. We put God, we focus on Him, so then our problems are distorted.
So good.
Right? But we tend to not do that. We tend to look at our problems as bigger than God. And so fulfill your responsibilities regardless how you feel. Because the ultimate goal in the Christian life is not to feel better. Okay? It is to respond rightly to life circumstances. Okay? The ultimate goal in life is to please God, not alleviate symptoms. And I know that flies in the face of everything, doesn't it? Please God, not alleviate symptoms. And in order to have real victory, we must live by God's word. Okay, not our feelings. Number two, realize God has great purpose in the things we suffer. Right, we just said that. Like that might be God's will is that you suffer. I think I said it maybe last week's sermon. You know, it's so often we have this view, like, I could never love a God who would do this, right? I could never believe in a God who would do this. And my thought was like, you could never believe in or love a God that would think different than you, right? That wouldn't act the way you would act in this situation, or wouldn't react in the way you would react in this situation. Like, that is so arrogant to think that, like, there can't be really a God if He doesn't do the things that I would do the way I would do them. Yeah. Rebecca. We don't grow, yeah. No doubt. So great purpose in the things we suffer. What if God had a different plan for you? How would He go about telling you? Would you have ears to hear if He did? Okay. Number three, change your thinking. Change your thinking. You get to choose what you think about. You get to choose what you dwell on. You can only think one thought at the same time, right? One thought at a time. You have to taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. You choose what you put on in your mind, what you take out of your mind. It's your choice. And so we have to change our thinking. These are great verses to look at. Change your thinking. Pam Norman always calls it stinking thinking. She'll tell her counselors, that's stinking thinking, right? We don't want stinking thinking. Number four, find biblical solutions to difficult situations. Biblical solutions. Number five, exercise good stewardship of your body. Sometimes you just need to sleep. You guys ever heard the acronym HALT, H-A-L-T? What it says? Stay away from H-A-L-T, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. You're more likely to sin if you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Stay away from those things. Okay? Number six, strive to live a disciplined life. And then last one, number seven, just know there's always hope. Always hope. And so you get to determine victor or victim. Choice is yours. Some of these resources that we put in the end of these two topics, I've used most of them, and they are so good. I would add to this Down But Not Out by Wayne Mack. Down But Not Out by Wayne Mack. It was actually the first resource I used. Down But Not Out. We've got it in the library. I met Wayne Mack recently, or last March, I think it was, and he's an older man now, and I told him, I said, you know, your book, Down But Not Out, was the first counseling resource I ever used with somebody, a lady who was really depressed, and he was really appreciative, and I said, but that wasn't the greatest contribution that you've given me. And he said, really, what was the greatest contribution I gave you? I said, you recommended these hot wings at Chick-fil-A, or chicken, at Kentucky Fried Chicken that were just out of this world. He goes, oh, I know. You know, so.
Is that in the book?
No. No, his son-in-law, we were talking about Kentucky Fried Chicken is better in South Africa, and he's like, oh, yeah. And he said, have you had, and it was some kind, I think called like drowned wings or something like that. And I'm like, no, I've never heard of it. He said, oh, my father-in-law, that's all he eats. He loves them. He said he could eat every meal every day. And I was like, I got to try these things. And so I had just had them when I went over there and saw them. And I was like, that was the greatest contribution you gave in my life. Was those dunked wings or drowned wings or something. All right. Any questions? We're ending early, so 10 minutes early. What questions do you have for me? And you don't have to have any.